Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sanghang namassami. So here we are on a cold, rainy, wintry night in December. Jane Jure's bundled up in blankets and comforters and jackets. Kleenex in hand. It's that time of year. I've got a number of meandering thoughts that I think somehow tie together, but we'll see how it all comes out. Kind of along the lines, though, of what this time of year means to me, just the darkness and the stillness, the holiday season, messages around Christmas time, all those kinds of bits and pieces, imagery floating around in my mind. I think, the overriding one is sort of one of moving inwards, kind of leading towards a contemplative mood. Just the messages of darkness and wetness, coolness, kind of naturally encourage one to turn inwards. More the quiet, contemplative side of existence. So that's kind of where my thoughts have been moving today, in the past few days. I was just thinking about all of us who are here in the hall this evening, and certainly for myself, that looking around, there's people who have been practicing for quite a long time and involved with this tradition for a long time, some people who are fairly new to it, but I suspect a fairly common experience that most, if not all of us, have had is kind of taking a look at our lives and seeing a sequence of events, experiences throughout our lives with a growing sense of questioning, of like, well, what is this all about, really? Where is this all going? Whether it's been for a short time or for many years of this kind of going through certain experiences, entering into different lifestyles, possibly different jobs or careers or relationships, or maybe just not getting quite involved with those early in life, but seeing right, early on, even this kind of conundrum of why? What is this all about? Whether some of us have spent quite a few years, including myself, in kind of pursuit of the experiences of the world. In all those ways that I just mentioned, or whether it's been just for a short term, I think that most of us have come up to that question of, gee, well, I've done this and I've done that, and I get moments of satisfaction and moments of happiness, but really, there's this kind of overarching sense of, boy, but it's not filling the bill. It's not enough, or it's not substantial, or it's not quite what I was expecting. There must be more to it than this. Or some, maybe even a more dramatic kind of discovery, with a real eye-opening experience or a real eye-opening moment of, my God, how did I get here? To quote a line from a Talking Heads song. my God, how did I get here? The Buddha has everybody's familiar, I'm sure, many people are familiar with his very strong statement, strong observation that I always keep coming back to as a reflection, where he says that this samsara is without a discernible beginning. Something like, for a long, long time, beings have been roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. And really, in a sense, that one statement, that kind of answers the question of why, or of how did I get here? Hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. Those are very strong images. Of fettered by craving, of this craving or wanting or desire as the strong motivating force propelling us through our daily lives. Fettered, it's like a ball on a chain, dragging us, holding us, steering us, controlling us. Fetters, the fetter of craving, and hindered or obstructed by ignorance, this big wall right in front of us that we just can't see through. This ignorance, ignorance of the way things are, ignorance as experienced through a lens of self. Self preoccupation, self-obsession. So this is why. This is the why. Not like there's any kind of, grand scheme or overall purpose to life. I used to ask myself the question, what is the purpose of life? What's my purpose here? And kind of gradually came to realize, well, there really isn't a purpose. it's something that's happened. It's the result of causes and conditions. It's the result of ignorance and craving. That's why we're here. There's no grand universal scheme, or at least in my understanding, God presence directing it with a grand purpose for me. It's here kind of because of a bunch of mistakes. So I don't say this to be depressing, but the reality that I got hit with somewhere along the line. And to watch how these two fundamental underlying conditions, ignorance and craving, pretty much direct all of our activities, and or have been for so long. And just watching how they interact and support each other too. The whole realm of seeking all sorts of different things to give us a sense of satisfaction, a sense of happiness, a sense of completeness, a sense of security. This craving that propels us from one object to another, whether it's object of the sense gratification, the five senses, the six senses, or whether it's trying to get something that will support our sense of security in the world, a sense of safety, well-being. Or whether it's that movement away, that running away from those things that are unpleasant. This is craving, the tanha, this driving force, and how, in a way, that force really supports also the ignorance, the sense of self that arises as a perception in our lives, because we, you know, if there's this raw craving, this raw sense of seeking something in the world to give us at least a temporary sense of happiness or satisfaction, then there needs to be an agent that is the one who's seeking that, and we create this perception of me or mine, a sense of self that is the agent for this wanting, this seeking, or this movement towards or away, towards that which we really, really want, or that which we really, really want to get away from, needs to have an agent that fulfills that need. So here we have this sense of self. It's kind of, I mean, they're mutually supportive, but kind of like, you know, sort of like, I want, therefore I am. Desire supporting that conceit of I am. So they support each other and go back and forth. And it's the same process of how we create the world around us. The world of myself in relation to the outside world, myself in relation to the objects of desire, myself in relation to other people, all the experiences that go on out there are part of this creative process that's founded by ignorance and craving. And it's all kind of manifested through the whole realm of perception, the perceptual process. Sanya perception is one of the sort of the main avenue for how we create this sense of self, and how we try and gratify the different desires. For being, for becoming, is how we make it happen, how we create the experience. And it's really a very subtle but ongoing process, very fascinating process to sort of pick apart and watch and break down and look at as it happens. And it's ongoing, the process of perception and creating the world. Another translation I think that I've sometimes heard for sanya is recognizing, recognition, and it's that process of having an experience that's say, for example, that's pleasant or desirable, and there's an association with whatever object it is that has given that sense of satisfaction, you know, whether it's a sensory object, a pleasurable sense experience, or a quality of mind, you know, becoming someone, becoming something important or meaningful, or in a relationship, there's this identification of that experience or that object as something that's good. You know, we put a value on it, make it because it was pleasant and it served some purpose. We call it good. If that happens again or something similar happens like it, then there's this process of recognition of perception, recognition that, oh, there it is again. You know, that's something that's desirable. That's something that's good. I want to be associated with that. I want to get that. I want to have that be part of my experience. And so it's like this cognizing process that happens over and over and over again, and kind of reinforces itself as recognizing. It's like recognizing is recognizing. And establishing a pattern. And the same is true with those kinds of unpleasant kinds of things. Somebody says something that is unpleasant or difficult, and there's a real unpleasant feeling associated with it, and we recognize that person as, oh, you know, that's somebody to avoid. I don't want to have to go through that again. So we establish this kind of more fixed perception of, you know, who she is or what she does to me or the kinds of things she does or what he says or, you know, how he is in the world. And I need to get away from him. So we've got this whole reinforcement process going on in the perceptual realm. You know, whether it's going towards or going away from or just totally ignoring, you know, this is how the world becomes fixed and becomes solidified. Me and them, me and other, me and the world outside. And there it is. We've created this whole realm of existence, this realm of being in our own experience to support that that wanting for pleasantness, that wanting to be away from unpleasantness, that wanting security, wanting a sense of stability, wanting a sense of a feeling of security and safety. And so it's through this perception that we create this whole movie, you know. It's really a vast movie that we keep on creating every moment of our existence. So at some point we kind of get a hint that this is all going on and realize that this is there's good times and there's pleasurable times, and I can get lost in that enjoyment of it and kind of expect that it's going to keep happening. Try and avoid all the times when it starts to change, fade away, and think, okay, well, you know, this won't last long. It won't come again. We kind of relive our dramas through a series of ongoing hopes, expectations that it could be otherwise. But then we start to realize, I've been doing this a long time, and it still keeps happening. It still keeps not giving me that sense of solidity and satisfaction and security that I want. Maybe there's an alternative. Maybe there's another way. And of course what we all have come to and discover is that there is this path that the Buddha described that shows us the way to disentangle ourselves from that. We get a sense we start to, when we consider this, we get just a bit of a hint or a sense of this disenchantment. And if it's taken in a kind of holding it wrongly, the disenchantment or the can feel like a sense of despair, a sense of depression, or darkness or gloominess. But if we use that in a more skillful way, then this sense of disillusionment or disenchantment is a real motivating tool, not to drag us down, but to inspire us to look for the alternative. And that's where we can use that in a very positive way, is with exploring the teachings and start to bring them into our lives. So there's, of course, a lot of different teachings that help point the way. And I think one of the ones, again, that strikes me as particularly pertinent for this time of year is that movement towards developing quietude, towards developing stillness, because it's in that quietude and stillness, and peacefulness of mind, where we can really start to see how the entanglement all started to happen and how we might start to disentangle ourselves from it, in order to liberate the heart. And working towards that stillness is the meditation practice. And it's a gradual practice of reconditioning, re-establishing the habits of mind, so that we unlearn the unskillful perceptions and actually consciously cultivate other perceptions that are skillful and useful and supportive towards moving towards that peacefulness, that stillness of mind. And the Buddha describes it in a lot of different ways. One of the ways that I've always appreciated that he's talked about it is in his discourse on the two kinds of thought, where he divides his thoughts into the unwholesome ones of sensory desire, sensory indulgence, ill will, and thoughts of harmfulness, and examines those, realizes the disadvantage in engaging with those, of supporting those, realizing that if those are indulged in and encouraged, that becomes the focus of the mind, as it becomes the experience of the mind, and realizing that becomes the experience of the mind, and how harmful that is for oneself and other people as well. So just reflecting on that comes the motivation to abandon the unwholesome, abandon the unskillful. Because you see the pain that's involved with that. And then he points out that the cultivation of their opposites, cultivation of simplicity, renunciation, cultivation of good-heartedness, kindness, thoughts of harmlessness that form the basis for our precepts, harmlessness in all of our actions of body and speech, cultivating those thoughts, cultivating those mind states, lightens the mind, brightens, softens, creates a sense of ease and uplift in the mind. And so that those thoughts, those cultivations, are worth attention, worth putting a lot of energy into developing. Again, developing perceptions, but along more skillful lines that create a sense of ease and well-being in the mind. And then he says that, particularly the cultivation of those kinds of good states of mind is worth spending quite a bit of time with, as he says, I think, in the suttas, cultivating them continuously for a day, continuously for a night, cultivating them for a day and a night. There's no harm in that. That could be quite beneficial. And then he goes on to say, it's interesting, it doesn't stop there. He acknowledges that as he did that, even with that real positive states of mind, abandoning the unskillful, establishing the skillful, that still the effort that's involved with that, the attention that's involved in maintaining those skillful states, even that can be tiring to the body, and when the body is tired, fatigued, even with cultivation of those kinds of mind states, then the mind is far from concentrated. It becomes difficult to establish a sense of peacefulness and stillness. The energies sag. So using those skillful states, one then lets go of the effort involved in sustaining them, and just allows the mind to settle, to become still, to become more peaceful, more unified, more concentrated, so that the mind isn't disturbed in any way whatsoever. And that kind of stillness, that peace, is the basis for the contemplations that result in insight and true release. So this cultivation of stillness, of peace, through letting go of the unskillful, cultivating the skillful, and then letting go of both of them, moving towards quiet, peacefulness, stillness, is a way of helping to start to disentangle the hindrance of ignorance and the fetter of craving. That's sort of the internal quality that I think of at this time of year, that moving towards quietude, of peace, of contemplation. And using the elements around us to support that, the darkness, the long night hours, the cool rain, the quiet forest, the animals that have gone into hibernation, the lack of activity in the insect realm. It's just all very quiet, supportive, steering us in that direction of peace and stillness. Kind of more along the external levels, this time of year, I think of, you know, some of the more engaged kinds of activities. Christmas time, you know, is sort of a old perception that comes up for me, and I think I was I'm old enough that I'm not totally and completely jaded by the perception of Christmas. Now it just seems to have such an association with consumerism and materialism and kind of craziness, at least maybe in some experiences. But and maybe there are still some people who have a more wholesome memory of it, or feeling, perception of Christmas, but I always have a sense of it being a time of support and giving and tending to others and coming together with people that you want to be together with. And so that kind of perception of this time of year brings up a memory of giving. And that's, I think, a real useful cultivation as well, is in an external way. Using our time with each other to be of service, to be of help. And that can be a real way of helping to dissolve the sense of self-absorption. You know, we get so self-absorbed in trying to create circumstances that are going to be conducive to our meditation practice or to our lives or to our development as, you know, in the monastic tradition or our practice as lay people. Sometimes we could get very self-absorbed and trying to protect our time, protect our energy and resources for that reason. And maybe sometimes what's really useful is just open-hearted giving and really seeing how that lightens and frees the burden of selfhood, self-absorption. I was struck very pleasantly by a couple of comments that a couple of the members of the community said over the past few weeks, or maybe even longer than that. And one was, it's like, first of all, just really, I'm really appreciating all the efforts that just about everybody is putting into maintaining the monastery and helping out and serving the community and people around it in different ways. It's been real pleasurable to observe that and be part of that. And a couple of comments that were made in recognition of that or in support of that kind of struck me very strongly. And one was somebody remarking about all the different kinds of things that Ajahn Janako was doing, and him remarking, yeah, I'm building up a lot of merit. I want to build up a lot of merit for this retreat. And just thinking how that's really a positive of way of looking at the work that's going on. It is, because if we have that kind of attitude with it, then it becomes a joy. It becomes something that's, engaging and fun and useful and energizing. It's not something I have to do to get through this next few weeks. It's something I want to do because it really creates a sense of energy and positivity. And another comment was something quite a while ago that I heard. It was Tanti Tapano, I think, somebody was saying, wow, you're really putting in a lot of extra time serving the community, doing extra things. And his comment was, well, when I do that kind of thing, when I engage in that kind of stuff, then I don't think about myself so much. And I thought, well, that's very, very insightful, very practical. It's just, much better to spend an afternoon going out and helping and doing some things and kind of losing track of oneself than to be lost in some bad mood or state of mind or sleeping for a few hours or whatever. Much better to get out of that kind of self-absorption and get out there and do something that's useful and helpful. So that's I think some, and just the effort that people are putting in towards listening to each other, approaching each other, kind of trying to resolve some difficulties. Living in a community like this, it's always going to result in some sort of rubbing up against each other, and just the efforts to be really tender and skillful and sensitive to those things. People going and spending time and talking with each other, trying to think of ways to reconcile any differences and support each other in our aspirations. That's one of the most important ways of giving here. We've got also the many lay supporters coming to pitch in and help out with the work, join people coming on cold, rainy days and filling in holes in the septic field. Just because they want to help out, or coming to offer food, cook a meal, join in the pace of the kitchen just to help feed us. That kind of giving is so uplifting to be part of. So that's kind of what this time of year means to me as well, as well as moving in, looking for peacefulness. It's a time of also looking outwards giving what we can give in terms of time or resources. And both of those are incredibly equally legitimate ways of helping to deconstruct this sense of self. It works in both directions, both inwardly and outwardly. So rather than letting a sense of disenchantment or disillusionment with the world as it is bring us down, really turning that into a motivation for looking deeper and for sharing what we can with each other as community. That's what we can do for ourselves and what we can do for each other at this time of year. So those are just a few kind of rambling reflections based on a cold, rainy night, and I'll leave it there for people's contemplation.